Welcome to Nodcast, episode 310. King got what? I'm Severin.
And I'm special guest Shiva.
Yep. So Fuzz is off in Utah having fun at a literary convention.
And my life is finally untangled long enough to actually record again. Because holy shit, things have been busy since I was last on. So, do we want to do where's Shiva been?
Where has Shiva been? I mean, has she been in the bad Chakat box?
That's a mighty big box. That's like refrigerator-sized box. Yeah, well, mostly Con.
Con ate you for several weeks.
And that's what kind of TFF happens. It started off slower this year because we moved it further back. But usually from, you know, January 1st in prior years, it was, you know, get going. This year we were delayed like 3 weeks because we shifted like 3 weeks. But when it comes to what I do at the convention, it's a lot more than just walk into the dealer's den and set stuff up. I do stuff in the background, like I make our staff polos. I helped with Con Store. I sent out a whole bunch of mailings. I was on the purchasing team, so I was buying stuff all over for various departments. So there's a lot more to what I do for the con than I usually do. So, in long story short, I worked a full-time job with a little bit of overtime, would come home at night, and spend most of my time after I got home to make dinner, take care of all my normal, like, household stuff that everybody does, then spend the rest of the evening either playing with spreadsheets or mailing people or talking with the other execs to work through problems. And then con. Oh my god, con. These guys have probably already given their con report, I imagine, but 2016 went pretty well for me, at least. We had food trucks, and I say this because my mate Sarah was the one that wrangles them, and that went pretty good. Only other thing from TFF that was absolutely amazing this year is Laura Garabedian did an amazing shirt for TFF this year. We ordered a lot of them, and then we sold them all. And then sold all the one other lots that were designated for other uses. And then we started taking mail orders. And oh my god, so many shirts. So yeah, I was kind of swimming in shirts for like since TFF getting that squared away.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, I see that pile of Nightmare Night shirts.
You need to put those up for sale.
So, yeah. And then, of course, as soon as we finished con, we'd been saving for a house for many, many moons. And we kind of hit the, we're ready to do this in December. Well, come to find out, we actually need a little bit more down payment than we had saved in December. But we looked at it as like, con is going to eat our lives. We will start this after con. So, con wrapped up. We had, like, the week following discussions. Then me, Sarah, and Siam started house hunting. One thing that you might not realize is that the Dallas housing market is kind of insane. And when I say insane, I'm saying that people are putting up houses, and within 2 days, they have multiple offers on them. And then they accept an offer, which means that they basically come to an agreement within like 2 to 4 days of being on market. That means that unlike other places where you go, you look at a house, you turn it over, you might come back in a little bit, see if it's still on the market, maybe see if the price drops, or if it's on long enough, maybe the seller will dicker around with you and, you know, no, you are fighting with four other people 2 days when it's been on the market to get a bid on the house. So to say it's high pressure is a little bit of an understatement. We didn't have a real estate agent. We weren't really able to. Everybody we sent a salvo out to didn't respond. And every time we did anything, we got a whole bunch of responses from shady looking people, like not very professional looking responses. I ended up going with a coworker who has a real estate license and like 30 years of experience, and she kind of does houses on the side. So what a lot of people in the furry community, because that's who I have to talk to, experienced with house buying in Dallas recently is be prepared for a long and frustrating experience. Because basically you walk up to a house, say, hey, I'll take a house. I'll take it for, you know, whatever they're asking minus $10,000. So if they want $250, you offer $240. Well, when there's three other people saying, I want it, I want it, I want it, you kind of got to worry that someone's going to overbid you. And their experience has been, make an offer, not get it. Make an offer, not get it. And several people I talked to who went through this were at it for like 4 to 6 months before they actually managed to land a deal. So I was kind of settled in for a long and frustrating process. So we started looking at houses, and every house that we looked like had been snapped up in like the last year or so. Somebody bought it cheap. Then they would go in and put in fancy thinger-dingers like shiny tub, granite countertops. But they wouldn't do anything that would actually fix up anything. So you get something with like, it's kind of like putting chrome plating on a pile of shit. It looks fancy, but underneath all that flash, it's not been improved on. And we looked at a lot of houses like this where it looked really shiny and there were a lot of underlying problems. And we went around to a bunch of open houses and we kind of saw this over and over again of just shiny shit. And then my coworker was sending us a bunch of listings a day. We go, yes, no, 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 no. And she'd start lining up for ones for us to look at. So there's one kind of nearby, and it was older, looked solid, went to look at it, realized that's exactly what it was. It was older, they hadn't put in, like, fancy granite countertops, they hadn't done, like, shiny garden toes with all these ooh and ah features. It was an older home, but it was very well maintained, very clean, very, I don't know if you've ever been to a place where somebody bangs a wall, and they don't patch it quite right, you know. This place, you could tell that where there had been damage to the wall, but it actually looked like you could barely see it. Yeah. It's not half-assed. Whoever had this house, it felt like it was their hobby, was keeping the house nice.
That's a good problem
to have. Put an offer on it. Yeah. Seller came back to us, said, countered us. And we finally managed to come to an agreement, and they took our offer. Let me tell you, the week between, because when you buy a house, you have what's called an option period, which is 7 days to change your mind. So after you put an offer on a house, and they say, okay, we'll take it for that money, you've got 7 days to look at it, turn it over, make sure there isn't like a hidden gate to hell in the basement. The walls aren't stuffed with bodies.
Free interdimensional travel. Yeah, the portal goes to hell, but maybe figure out how to recalibrate it. You can get out and end up somewhere else.
So you got 7 days to decide if you're going to want to shackle yourself to this place for the next 30 years. Let me tell you, those 7 days of trying to get dudes out there to look at it to make sure that there's no cracks in the pipe and you're not basically shackling yourself to the money pit and you're going to regret this for the next rest, 30 years, it's really kind of stressful because it's a big commitment. And oh God, please don't let me making the worst decision of my life. So we finally hit the end of the option period. We decide to go with it. There's a little last-minute haggling. And, we're now locked in. So barring nothing going wrong, and so far everything is on schedule, we'll get the keys on April 29th. And it is the 7th. So time is ticking down, and now we move. So all the boxes, all the moving, all the learning, what all you have to do to set up a house and buy a house. It's not easy. It's not like just walking out and buying a car or buying an Xbox. There's a lot of back and forth between banks and realtors and making sure the house is not a secret shithole And yeah, all this fun stuff. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. A lot of fucking stress. So yeah. What about you?
Oh, I'm reading up on like a response for our first email that came in on talking about conventions. As for me, I've been working on audiobooks, doing YouTube crap, not dying because of allergy season here in, you know,
yeah,
here in Dallas.
Oh my God, the pollen is like coating cars. You can like run your finger through the pollen and it's yellow.
Yeah, I have a black car. It has a green tinge now.
Yeah, I washed mine like 2 weeks ago. It's got another green tinge.
Yeah. This is a. I'm grumbling at my fucking iPad. It's an iPad 1, so it doesn't have the most recent iOS updates that I can like block ads and shit. So websites, like I'm having multiple websites, like, oh, once they get to the try to load ads, the browser crashes.
Oh.
It's like, look, I'm just trying to read a thing about how Nintendo and the Pokemon Company are a bunch of fucks. And sue fans.
Let's read the email and then we can put that in context.
Yeah. See, other than that, I mean, I've not been doing a lot since the con. I mean, we survived the con and everybody, you know, nothing broke. I put into reader mode, maybe that'll stop it. So the other thing to talk about is those poor guys over at FurCast.
Oh, God.
That's before we get to the emails. That their audio got used by a
hacker group
that compromised a bunch of repeater boxes. But apparently there was this one particular company's internet radio repeater boxes that this group targeted, and a number of them were compromised because they had shitty passwords. And the hackers aired an episode or two of FurCast, which is another podcast in the furry fandom.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, when I saw somebody retweet about furry hack, furry podcast hack, I'm like, oh, Jesus, is
it us? Did your stomach just drop out?
Yeah, because I'm like, it's bad that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, oh, Jesus, are people going to have heard... Like, is this going to be a new kind of PR nightmare? Is this going to ruin everything forever? The conversation between two men talking about how they want to smash that bunny pussy and then later on discussed about how one should not fuck a snake. We're not sure what they're referring to, but you should not fornicate with reptiles. It's very bad for them. She's a Lamia! Fuck the centaur instead. She's better. It's Monster Musume! Yeah, that was terrifying and bad, but thankfully they're like, all right, look, you know, we can see that this was just hackers hacking gonna hack, and the FurCast people are having to cooperate with the authorities, and they're probably not in any trouble. I mean, their stuff's freely available and on the internet for anybody to listen to, so... It could have been anybody's content.
It could have been ours.
Could have been ours. Could have been...
not sheath or any unfurled.
Or, you know, something real innocuous. Or, you know, an episode of last podcast on the left where they talk about necrophilia.
Or any of the BDSM kink podcasts. It could have been anything. Yeah. I would think that they use something generic. I think you're going for shock value.
Yeah, they're going for shock value. And
so
I guess they decided that FurCast was sufficiently shock value-y.
Apparently we're too main one day.
We're too normal. Oh, man. I don't know if that's the case. I'll admit that I don't listen to FurCast. I don't listen to any fur podcast, really, or pony podcast. I listen to things like Last Podcast on the Left, where they talk about serial killers and cults and stuff like that. You know, bright and cheery context. And stuff about video games.
Mm-hmm.
So... serial killers and video games. That's me. And anime.
And snake girls.
Yeah. All right, so I guess we're just going to go right into the emails this week, because other than that, there's not been a lot going on. Zootopia continues to kick the shit out of everything. Batman vs. Superman dropped a whole bunch. It was a bad movie.
It kind of bombed.
There it was a Zootopia documentary that got released. I've downloaded it. I haven't had a chance to watch it. It was actually like one of the things that's going to be on the Blu-ray that the company actually released early. It got posted up as an unlisted thing, or maybe they posted it to their Facebook or whatever. I got the link off the Comics and Cartoons board of 4chan, and the Zootopia thread. People are like, oh shit, get on this. And it goes into a lot of the detail about how fucking dark the original version was. But I haven't had a chance to see it all the way through, so, and you probably haven't seen it, so we can't really discuss it this week. And we were going to watch it on Tuesday at Fuzz's, but Fuzz is out of town. So, yeah, I've got this file that we need to watch so we can discuss more Zootopia. This is the first mention of Zootopia this entire show. We're really slipping.
We've got a quota.
I know, right? But we haven't had a chance to watch it. And we'll get some hot takes on it, hopefully, maybe next week when Fuzz is back from town, out of town or whatever. Who knows? Okay. On that note, we're going to shift into emails. Emails is emails. As always, you can contact us.
No, it's just...
Oh, you're just, like, picking a...
Cat fur.
Okay.
Lots of cat fur off my shirt, because...
And, of course,
it's spring, and...
It's spring, and you have gray cats, and you're wearing a dark-colored shirt,
and they're exploding. They're approximately... Yeah. I had to stand outside of Whataburger before dinner and just go, you know, shit. Well,
plus you have Bo, and I'm sure... And...
Well, when I got home from work, I sat on the couch, like, waiting to hear from you when you're ready. So the cats came up and said hi and nested on my tits for a while, like
as they cats do.
And I didn't quite realize until I was pulling into Whataburger exactly how coated in cat hair I was. So I spent, brush it off before I go and shed all over everybody's food.
The other day, I actually had to take some Benadryl so I could get some sleep. When Webster brings the dogs over, she has her two little dogs. And I, got down on the floor and was playing with them. And then I looked at the carpet and realized, oh, my God, there's so much dog fur. Oh, God, I just laid down it. Oh, God, my face is on fire. This is terrible.
What, are you allergic to dogs on your face?
Yes, apparently. Oh,
I did not know you were allergic to dogs.
I'm not really. It's just I had an allergic reaction to...
Maybe pollen on them, too, from outside?
Yeah, it was probably, a combination of everything, because they go outside. They're little doggos, and they roll around in the grass. So it was probably just a combo of everything, and I hadn't taken an allergy pill that day, and it was like, oh, God, oh, God. My neck, it itches. Ah.
Go wash your face.
Yeah, and take a Benadryl and pass out for 9 hours. I don't take Benadryl,
but for a reason.
To take Benadryl. So we are going to go into the emails. You can always email us at notcast@foxzephyrs.com. You can send us anonymous questions via our Tumblr, notcast.tumblr.com. Always open to... dudes and dudettes and anybody in between sending us questions about, you know, whatever. So we are going to go into this first question. And this is something that you and I can actually pontificate on quite a bit, Shiva.
Yes, we can.
How do I convention? Greetings, Notcast. Longtime listener, first-time writer. A while back, you mentioned that you might be doing a few episodes or spin-off podcasts or something like that for all the intimate details that go into organizing, planning, and implementing a convention. I was wondering if this was still a thing that might be happening, as I'm sure I'm not the only listener that was curious about the subject. As seasoned con-crafting veterans, I'm sure you all have plenty of wisdom to share. I'd like to know how the basic starting points of throwing together a convention. I'm interested as I and a large pool of friends were looking to start up our own convention in the nearest future, and we were just looking for solid advice before we commit significant resources and energy to the project. I have numerous questions, but I'll try to keep it to the big questions we keep circling back to without a clear answer. Okay, here we go. How do you choose or negotiate a location?
Okay, well...
We're just going to go point by point here.
First of all, you have to look about what size you're looking at. Are you looking at 100, 200, 3,000, you know, 4,000? You have to kind of look at about what your target market is going to be. Then you have to... Depends on if you're in a large city, a small city, or... anything like that. Are you looking to go to the local market, or are you looking to pull from countrywide, regional, or are you looking even at international amount of people attending? And this kind of goes into the whole venue, because you have to make sure that you have a venue that will be able to hold your people. So, like Free Fiesta, that's the best example I had. We were aiming for 250. The Crown, which is our first hotel, had a large ballroom that can be divided up into many sections with air walls. They had several small side rooms, a couple small larger rooms. So you have to kind of break it down by what you want to do. Do you want a vendor hall? Okay. Do you want panel rooms? Okay. Do they have smaller rooms that you can use to host little panels? Do you need a big central place for large gathering announcements like opening, closing ceremonies, dances, all that happy hoo-ha? We looked at a bunch of local hotels. We got kind of laughed at by a couple of them. And finally, the Crown, you know, accepted us and gave us a price. So it's a lot of on the ground, walking around, looking at places, talking to them, seeing what their prices are, seeing what kind of space they're willing to offer you. There are a couple companies that will source those for you, but that's an extra expense, so you might not want to get into that your first year.
Yeah.
Your best bet, and hopefully you're in a larger city, is to go to some of the larger hotels and see what kind of ballroom meeting space. You want some place that kind of specializes in large groups and especially meetings, weddings, corporate events, mm-hmm. things like that.
Yeah.
Not the hotel, the Holiday Inn or something like that.
It does help if there are other smaller conventions in your region. You can talk to them and get an idea of what hotels are friendly to your type of event.
You can also look at what hotels they're using, too, because yeah. we turn around, we look at Acon, we look at A-Fest, we look at some of the other Comic-Cons.
All Con at the time.
All Con. Yeah, so look at what other conventions, even if they're not your genre, look at what other conventions in the area are using and how they're using it.
Because fan conventions are under a particular, like, they get their own little heading when it comes to cons, and, like, some hotels won't entertain the idea at all. Like when we were poking our heads around for possibly a different venue for Nightmare Nights that wasn't necessarily the Intercontinental, we mm-hmm. talked to a Marriott, the Quorum, and basically they laughed at us. Mm-hmm. They did not treat us seriously, though they did get a shocked look on their face when they told us who our parent company was mm-hmm. and who they had just treated so poorly for half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's their loss, not ours. So basically, you have to do some networking with your local scene and find out who's using what near you.
Best bet would be is if you are not in a major city, look at the closest major city to you that has access to an airport if you're looking for any kind of non-local travel, because you're going to need to look for people to be able to get in and out. Whether they drive, but if they fly, you don't want someone flying into, I don't know, say Dallas and then driving out to Odessa, Texas.
Yeah.
You don't want them to have to drive 2 hours because then they have to figure out about renting a car or catching a bus or meeting up with somebody to pool. Your best bet is to plant a convention near some kind of airport. And the bigger the hub, the better. That's one reason why there's so many, you know, conventions here in Dallas. We've got two large airports that help people get in and out of the city with decent rates.
Yeah.
So you not only have to plan the exact hotel, you have to pick your city. And then you have to hope that that city is somewhat near you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're lucked out because we're in the city itself. But there's other people that throw conventions that are not anywhere near their convention space. They can't just walk it every day. So
there's that step. So you need basically network with your local scene.
And
if there's not a local scene,
I would really recommend looking at what local cons there are and kind of follow on their coattails.
How do you acquire starting capital to fund the various aspects of the con? A job.
Yeah. A lot of TFS funds came out of people's pockets.
Yep.
We had quite a few people, founders who chip in. We had a couple of people who are no longer with us chip in. We did our first, 10 Lifetime memberships we sold for $200 a pop.
Yeah.
So that brought in $2,000. That was that? Yeah, $2,000. That was some of our deposit.
Yeah, because we had to put down a deposit. And you know what? Those folks that still have those badges, they got their money's worth.
Oh, yeah. And some of them are on staff, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's how it works.
We actually have two of the lifetime members on staff now.
I've got a couple of people that give that buy my $500 tickets that are on my staff.
Mm-hmm. So that's you do something like Nightmare Nights does their what do you call it?
It's the Celestial Sponsor where we do like we have, but okay. that's a super high end thing where it also includes like Fogo de Show. It also includes an hour long cocktail party with an open bar and hors d'oeuvres, and you're getting to talk to the guests and go to a Churrascaria. Mm-hmm. With the guests. And yeah, it's a super high-end ticket.
Yeah, but you do things like that.
It's God-level. Think FWA is something similar.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ours is more expensive because our cars are more expensive to run in certain areas.
So that's what we... You usually have to do some kind of gimmick. And I hate to say it, you're probably going to out-of-pocket a lot of it.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, straight up, a lot of... You don't start a con thinking you're going to make a lot of money out of the gate because, hey, you're not.
I spend hundreds of dollars each year on free
Same
Fiesta.
Here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this year I bought, I put in a couple $100 worth of stuff for gaming and DLC and getting things up to speed and all that. I mean, you know, whatever. You do this con because you want to do it.
And
not because you think you're going to make bank on it.
You also have to make the decision on if you're going to be... most cons start out as there's a business, and the business puts on an event.
Yes. You don't want to do this as sole proprietors. Do not do it as sole proprietors.
Because if you end up being a sole proprietor, you are on the hook for any failure versus a company.
So that's why you create an LLC.
Yes.
Because if the LLC goes under, well, so much for that. And you scurry away.
So... First, you kind of have to set up the business, and then the business puts on the event. So you have to decide if you're going to be a nonprofit or if you're going to be a profit. Basically, a difference comes down to paying taxes depending on your state. That's something you need to find out. Now, if you're a nonprofit and you put into your bylaws exactly what you do when the con folds with all the money, like Drama, the one that puts on Furry Fiesta, we don't get to pay ourselves. If Fiesta folds, if we decide that we're going to walk away from this, we don't get to keep the money that's left over. We have to, you know, donate it or give it away or something or whatever. We don't get to ever make a profit off it.
I think the bylaws state that we have to give it to charity or donate it to another convention in a similar vein.
Yeah.
Same with all of our inventory.
Yeah. So there's no way that we can ever make money off Fiesta due to how it is. On the other hand, we save a lot of money in taxes. Mm-hmm. Because of this. Whereas if you do a for-profit, you have to worry about taxes. But if you ever decide to just stop doing it, it's for-profit. You can do with the money what you want if there's any left over.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, well, on the Nightmare side of things, we're for-profit because our parent company is for-profit. But we basically are break-even with tiny little bits of profit, but we still offset it by cost, so we end up paying very little, but nobody makes any money.
Mm-hmm.
Really. But our situation is different because we're owned by Phoenix Entertainment, which is a mega, 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 mega big con org.
Yeah.
Is there some sort of checklist that can be devised for things that need to run a successful con? I would, again, say talk to your local scene dudes. Like, if there are other conventions that are in your area that have run for multiple years, get some FaceTime and talk to these guys. You're going to need to network with these guys anyway.
We do,
because if you don't talk to your local scene and you're just some rando, that's not going to help you out. You need to integrate yourself into the local convention ecosystem and find out how not to step on anybody else's toes, and that in return they probably will help your ass out. Because a lot of there's crossover, people that like lots of things, or, hey, these guys are new and I want to lend a hand because I remember when I was a noob and running cons for the first time, right?
So basically you have to checklist. You need to decide what kind of company you're going to be. do some scouting around for location to find out exactly about what the ballpark figure is that you're going to need.
That varies wildly, by the way.
Yeah, and you might be able to decide of, oh, shit, we can't get ideal star location. If we scale it down a little, can we get something that we might actually be able to do? So once you have a couple of feeling of how much you're going to be looking at to rent the convention space, you start looking at gathering capital, whether that's chipping in and saving, whether that's by GoFundMes, what have you. Yeah. So find out how much deposit you need to do. Start setting up a website. Start setting up all the like registration tools that are out there so that you know you can track the people.
Just EventZilla.
Yeah, as EventZilla's worked good for you and for me for Siesta.
And they recently upgraded the site, so it looks a lot flashier.
I need to look.
Faster, too.
Oh, really? So you have to start looking at where, how much, how am I going to structure this in the long term? Do I have a fan base to pull from, or am I going to need to import them from other parts of the country? How are you going to market this to get word out, to make sure you people know you exist to come to your event? And that's all before you start actually forming the event itself.
So this is, now of course, now we've given all this information, this is where we also get to crash his dreams with no survivors. My final question in this email is probably best answered by Savern due to his experience with Nightmare Nights. A convention we'd like to put together would be a Pokemon convention! There aren't many of those around, and the ones that exist piggyback on anime cons. Most of our concerns in trying to make this a reality is not getting our pants sued off by Nintendo and or the Pokemon Company International. What kind of obstacles are there in hosting a convention themed around a mainstream intellectual property? Nintendo and TCPI are as defensive as their intellectual property as Hasbro, so I'd imagine they would have to jump through many of the same hoops that you did for Nightmare Nights in order to make a convention happen. So any advice on what to expect on that front or how to avoid stepping on the toes of the big companies with their big scary lawyers would be much appreciated. Thanks in advance for any wisdom shared, Vion the EV. P.S. A follow-up debate that we've been having is related to this topic is what do the artists that would want to peddle lewd arts at a theoretical Pokemon convention? Should it be an outright no smut allowed, a separate 18-plus area for purveyors or porn, or something in between? So,
I think the long story short is Nintendo does not play ball.
Nintendo absolutely does not play ball. So, if you go back and if you look on the internet, talking about Ramar Jones, because this guy put on the 5th annual unofficial Pokemon PAX kickoff party on August 27th at 9 p.m. at a bar.
A party.
A party that had a $2 cover charge to help cover his guys. And the guy takes a loss on this. So he got sued by Pokemon Company International for $5,400 for posting on Facebook about a party that had a Pikachu and a Snivelly on it. And Nintendo was like, no, you're going to pay us $5,400 because fuck you.
So no.
I'm sorry. Nintendo is far, 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 far worse when it comes to anything of their intellectual property. Now, with dealing with Hasbro, Hasbro is very hands-off. We make sure that we list ourselves as unofficial. We don't say that we have no connection to them. We are just a group of fans talking about this thing. And Hasbro turns a blind eye. Now, they will send people to the con and make sure that you're not doing anything on the con level that's besmirching their brand. But more or less, it's live and let live. As long as you're not having main panels with, you know, show guests talking about, you know, boy, howdy, I want to come inside Rainbow Dash, you're kind of okay. And some cons have had some adult content off to the side, but for me, we are of a blanket ban because it's a kid's show.
And you don't want to do anything with Hasbro.
Whatever floats your anime goat, porn's great. But there's a time and a place and a convention that has all ages.
Especially, you get little girls at night.
Little girls, little boys, all ages, whole thing. Lots of kids with families. We make it very accessible for families.
Very squeaky clean.
Because that covers our ass, that we're more comfortable with it that way. And Hasbro's lawyers don't come in and hit us with the ban hammer.
So
even if Nintendo allowed conventions, which I just told you about a guy getting sued for having a Pokemon on a poster for a party on Facebook and had to get GoFundMe to pitch him the cash. You're not going to be able to do this, I'm pretty sure. Like, Nintendo is a few levels of fuck you above
Hasbro.
And the adult question, even if Pokemon Company or Nintendo allowed you to do the event, it would have to be 110% squeaky clean. Because if there is a vine whip going anywhere but hitting another Pokemon in the face, you are in trouble, son.
Yeah, so do hold on a convention. Probably not the genre you're going to do it in.
So do your research. Do what we've told you to do, but realize that Nintendo and Pokemon are probably no fucking go, and you might look at other genres.
The people that could probably pull it off, if it was a company known for putting on conventions that kowtowed to corporations religiously, like Comic-Con or something else, where they have a very good standing relationship of being respectful and borderline Nazi when it comes to following rules, they might be able to negotiate something, maybe, with Nintendo. But I don't... You can always reach out to them. You can ask.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt to ask, but it... Just so you know. And, like, the things, like, sub-events going on during other established conventions, well, that's because other established events are not blanketing... Or not marketing themselves. We're a Pokemon con. It's anime. We're an anime con that has a Pokemon event. And it doesn't posit itself to be in any way related to Pokemon Nintendo Company. And, like, I looked on Facebook because I'd heard that there had been, quote, some Pokemon events here in Texas. And it turns out they're all CCG related. They're, like, official Pokemon card game play events.
Which is different
than... Which is not a Pokemon fan convention where people...
That's getting together to play the card game that you've already paid money for, yada, yada, yada. So look at it. It's possible. But I would ask first and do a little bit of negotiation there. See if they're in any way, shape, or form receptive before you start laying money and time and effort down on the table.
Sorry. So Anonymous asked a question.
What did Anonymous ask? Let's see. Isn't it about time the podcast has an official Telegram group? I don't know.
I guess we could make one.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, if people want to chat, I mean, Telegram groups are really easy to set up.
We can discuss it and see if we want to actually open up that can of worms.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we're a bunch of fans of Notcast and a couple of the dudes that run it, and look at all these stickers and lewds people are throwing in there. Oh, dear. Oh, this is bad. One more thing to moderate. But we'll see.
Taking a stand about homophobia in sports. What's this next one? It's a big link.
Yeah, by taking the knot. Rainbow Laces Skins Australia. I have clicked the link. What is it?
Homophobia, not me. That's kind of cool.
I'm waiting for it to load and not crash on this old-ass browser.
It's basically... Skins.net. It's a, let's see, boot for...
Rainbow Laces.
Let's see. Let's see. 46% of study of participants believe that LGBTs are not accepted in the sporting culture. 73% of gay men surveyed felt that homophobia is more common in team sports than other parts of society. 84% of people who took part said homophobic jokes occur all the time, often, or sometimes. Oh. It makes no bloody sense. Let's see. So it's basically a pride and diversity, pride and sport
event wearing rainbow shoelaces between Thursday, 31st March, and Monday, April 4th.
Which is a little past.
A little bit past, but it's also in Australia.
Yeah. It's a really neat thing. I like this.
PSI is an initiative of the Australian Human Rights Commission and Australian Sport Commission is legacy of Brigham Cup Sydney. And they're trying to basically make soccer more inclusive in Australia. And that's great. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I scroll down and, like, their hashtag is not me.
Yeah.
Hashtag rainbow laces. I'm like, hashtag not me. Oh, we're a bunch of surly perverts. Ah.
That's still, I like that that initiative.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, Australia is a bit behind in a lot of ways on the gay rights thing. But it's good. I mean, and thing is, though, it's an actual initiative of the Australian Human Rights Commission. So they're trying to get their shit together. I mean, it's one of those things that's so hard to compare one-to-one. It doesn't quite correlate to U.S., but hey, rainbow laces by taking the hashtag not me. All right.
There's the next one.
One is from the Wolfie Man. Hey, dude. I did give you an out. It's your fault for not skipping the 2 pages or so behind the break. This will be shorter, though. Have you guys heard of this yet? And includes a link to a Tumblr. Howlingly yours, the Wolfie Man.
All I know is I open the Tumblr and there's 2 giant tits with nipple pierces. Drawn tits. Staring at me.
Well, I just see in the tag Kevin Sano. So that's a step. That's a thing.
Something about Fudov. I'll look at that after.
What a lovely parody. Well, yeah, I see it. But
I can't watch it right now because while we're recording.
Well, we can pause the recording and look at this real quick because I'm really interested because it also mentions Mega Sweet and Atril. I don't know who this Black Junior 13 is, but I know the other three, and those three sure love their horse cock on females.
All right, well, let's pause, BRB. And then we will judge loudly.
Okay, I draw pony fooder, dick chicks by the oodle. I'm on my Wacom tablet sketching fillies with big noodles. Okay, I draw pony fooder, dick chicks by the oodle. I'm on my Wacom tablet sketching fillies with big noodles. Okay, I draw pony fooder, dick chicks by the oodle. I'm on my Wacom tablet sketching fillies with big noodles. Okay, I draw pony fooder, dick chicks by the oodle. I'm on my Wacom tablet sketching fillies with big noodles.
Okay. Dick reach to the flow, make them nuts shake.
Giggly.
The jizz stick to your clothes, call it dictate. Draw them riding on a cock like a dick weight. Hell, might give it a knot.
What does the dick say?
Say Kev, don't we do this every day, Kev?
Huh?
I work them long nights just like a game dev.
Huh?
Finishing commission so I can move out this motel.
And bronies give us cash.
So much cash, I need a PayPal.
Now we at conventions, selling prints and posters.
Comic books, pillowcases, even pony coasters. Getting by. Clap under the table. I drew up with a D, but I swear
Okay,
I draw pony fooder.
Swerve.
Dick chicks by the oodle.
Swerve.
I'm on my Wacom tablet sketching fillies with big noodles.
Yes.
I draw pony fooder.
I mean, penis?
Dick
I
chicks
mean,
by the oodle.
Dicks?
I'm on my Wacom tablet sketching fillies with big noodles.
Members?
SFM, food animations, and damn right it's anthro. I'm animating these dick girls with Doug Winger at ho. I'm scene swapping like Tarantino Kill Bill looking asshole. I'm cropping to these black borders look too gorgeous. All they want is a cum shot in every project that I got. I take my time, render it out, then post it up on Dropbox. Check the rig, check the skin. If there's a source crash, do it all again. My Tumblr feed full of pony seed in any format, including WebM. 3D, preference, frame rate, 60 FPS. Made white liquid shoot from a cock so hard that it clipped right through the mesh. Woo! Fooda, ponies, anthro, come flows wherever I go, wherever we go, we piss off homos.
Okay.
It's like I draw pony fooda,
swerve.
Dick chicks by the oodle.
Swerve.
I'm on my Wacom tablet sketching fillies with big noodles.
Yeah.
I draw pony fooda,
yeah.
Dick chicks by the oodle.
I'm
on my Wacom tablet sketching fillies with big noodles.
Get that 8 minute that morning and that jacket. the mic got when it upload on the reboot, which happened to be the best pick. I get the uploads all over Tumblr and the reblog, and it is the champion song. When it comes to my god, which everybody loves and they love
throw
it.
Throw a giant dick on Applejack. I drew a bunch of dicks in my new art pack. I even drew a dick on little Sweetie Belle. You know what that mean, I'm going straight to hell. I log on to my Tumblr dashboard like I'm the shit. I tell them give me 50 Fuda twice or I'ma quit. Most artists' taste level ain't at my waist level. Make her dick grow till it's up in your face level. Don't do requests, but I'll draw a commission. Plus my skills make your skills look like they missing. Something about Twilight, her bulge looks so cozy. I used to draw noses that look just like Yoshi's. Now I draw ponies that have human bodies. I made dicks my living instead of a hobby. So many dicks that they form a battalion. You gon' see fillies with cocks big as stallions.
Okay, not fun, my Patreon campaign. Come the color of mayonnaise, watching season 5 while I'm online drawing big dicks on my Cintiq. Doesn't matter what age range, every female get a sex change. Got reported to the Tumblr team, now I got a post on my Deviant page. Started in 21-1, drawing cute pics, then went beyond. Fuda Shy, Canna Girls, then did a comic for Luna's Magic Wand. Yep. Horse dicks, all these Fuda mares got horse dicks. Or human dicks with no foreskin on lowly girls around age 10. Balls,
balls.
Dancing, original G of this fandom.
Fandom.
Got more pics than you can fathom. Hope nobody called Chris Hansen.
Okay, I draw pony Fuda.
Swear.
Dick chicks by the Uda.
Swear.
I'm on my Wacom tablet searching Phillies with big noodles.
Okay,
I draw pony Fuda.
Swear.
Dick chicks by the Uda.
Swear.
I'm on my Wacom tablet searching Phillies with big noodles.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Are you getting enough? I bet you'd love more, right? Well, AdamandEve.com wants to give you more, with 10 free gifts. First, you'll get a sexy surprise for her. Second, a specially selected toy for him. And third, a little something we know you'll both enjoy. Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD. And number 10, free shipping on your entire order. So what do you have to do to get your 10 free gifts? It's not hard. Just go to AdamandEve.com and select any one item. It can be an adventurous new toy, sexy piece of lingerie, or anything you desire. Just enter offer code NOT at checkout and you'll get all 10 free gifts. Go check out AdamandEve.com today. Select one item and get 10 free gifts, including free shipping when you enter offer code NOT. That's K-N-O-T at AdamandEve.com.
We're back, and so are you. Maybe.
Phillies with big noodles. So that was a different take on the of a thing about there's no cock like horse cock. And in this particular case, it's on about anthro horses that have giant tits
and
hips and also giant horse cocks. So that was Fuda by Wootmaster. That was his April Fool's joke. Well, guess what? A lot more people are going to hear it now.
Thank you, Wolfie Man.
Thank you, Wolfie Man. You've provided us with some lulls for the week.
And traumatized our listeners, too.
Yeah.
It was so great we had to share it.
I hope that we look in our Patreon goes down to nothing. Everyone's like, no, you monsters. So, yeah, thanks, Wolfie Man.
All right. You want to get the next one? It's a wall, and yep. I did the last wall. You can have this wall. Wall.
Foie con report.
Foie.
Foie. From Oregano D. Oregano with the horse cock. Yay!
I don't know why that struck me as so funny, but Oregano D?
That's what the name site has.
Okay.
I attended my second convention. Yay! And I got to take a number of friends to their first convention ever. It was nice to attend a quite large one about a year and a half after Oklacon, and the theme was camping. How awesome was that? Oh my gosh, I dropped so much money at this convention. I tried to give myself a budget of $300 for the dealer's den and artist alley, but that disappeared in a day. I threw so much money at the Rukus for some prints, then I bought off the beaten path for her to sign. Someone was there promoting Catbox stuff. I got the Caribbean Blue books, volume 1-3, and I saw Cheetah there with his cats and camera stuff and bought some portfolios. Gideon was there. Squee! So, more horsecock. I didn't get his Bible, but I got some good stuff. I saw an Umbreon plush for $200 that I was tempted to, but it was just too much for one purchase. I believe I was quite calm in meeting those people that I'm a fan of, and I'm sorry to say, Fuzz, I think I used you for practice. The artist alley was nice and full of people. The entire convention space felt nice and spacious and perfect for the amount of people attending, but the alley was the most cramped space, but not really all that bad. There was still plenty of room for a person and a full suitor to pass each other between tables. I got myself 3 new badges laminated there thanks to the communal laminators they had on a table. The convention space also had a FedEx office, which was a nice touch. I saw a number of people making use of it. Everything seemed to flow very nicely from one day to the next. It was a bit disorienting to arrive there Thursday and spend some time doing stuff, so that Friday felt like Saturday. Hey, more stuff to cram into one weekend. It was a nice time to hang with friends, friends of friends, meet new people, go to panels, and listen to people share their experiences and talents. And my god, those fursuiters can dance. The raves were also very nice, quite loud, but not terrifyingly so, and I couldn't hear any redlining distortion at all. So props to the AV crew and the DJs for being awesome. Also, I bought my first toys there. I am a confirmed furfag. He bought the dongs. Perhaps horse cocks.
Now I'm sensing a theme, Sovereign.
There's no cock like horse cock, and we just heard a song about it. Now I am left with a minor case of PCD. Maybe it'll get a bit worse after the con high flushes out of my system. Thankfully, I didn't get con crud, but I do honestly believe that's because I brought Airborne with me. Pro tip, bring Airborne. That is all. Oregano D.
Oh, my God. Your sister.
Oh, no.
Your sister. Your sister shared that.
Oh.
What the hell is that?
It's a cat marrow. It's a... she was showing me a picture. Anytime you're like, oh, God. Your sister, I'm like, oh, God, what happened? Oh, no, it's actually benign. It's somebody has a... Looks like a Dodge...
Camaro with cat eye headlights, and a cat airbrushed on the inside of the lid with like LEDs lighting up the pupils.
Yeah,
like tracing the pupils.
It's got a blue Siamese cat car.
It's amazing when what the fuck all rolled into one.
So, anyways, P.S. The last time I wrote in reporting on my Oklahoma experience, I think you mispronounced the name. It's exactly like the herb oregano. So, hey, you had a fun time. Sounds like, it went well. Speaking of FWA, I didn't pay as much attention to it this year. Because, you know, last year there's always the hashtags. Oh, God, you know, X, Y, and Z. And, I mean, it seemed to go mostly okay. Which, I mean, for a con in downtown Atlanta, that's a good thing.
I didn't hear if there was much in the way of break-ins or anything this year. I didn't hear
if there was some dumbassery and people were like, people marked up the elevators. Which is just shitty behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was, like, I saw a tweet about it, actually. It was the first tweeter that was like, I was up till 4 in the morning cleaning the fucking elevators so that we didn't get in trouble. I'm like, on one hand, that's really nice of that person to do that. On the other hand, you could have just told the hotel, because they're going to find out anyway. Mm-hmm. They probably have cameras in the escalators and saw who did it, and they were aware of it. But still, oof. It seemed to have come and gone. I mean, everybody's kind of afraid at this point. It's like, oh, God, what dumb shit are people going to pull off and cause X-Con to be damaged? I'm like, well, I mean, it sucks that there's that sense. But I think if we can get through this convention cycle with no other cons getting nuked, I think that the feeling will pass. I mean, the situation with Rainforest was multiple years of bad behavior culminating in a final big orgy of fuck. Not metaphorical, not literal, and that other conventions that have good relations with their hotels are not quite as vulnerable.
I didn't hear about too many big hotel disasters at FWA.
Yeah, and but... with Path was able to tweet from Fiesta that we didn't have anything happen this year that the hotel.
Yeah, there's too... minor stuff. There's always minor stuff,
but like, you know, it happens. So this is a long one from Jeeves.
Yes.
Want me to read it? I'll let you have the,
I can read, kinda.
Okay.
All right. Dear Notcast, at the end of May, it's confuzzled. This year will be my second time attending the con and my second furry con overall. I had an amazing time last year, and as a result, I'm going as a sponsor this year. Yay, extra con swag. But this year, I'm not just an attendee. Last year, I had an amazing privilege of attending writing panels hosted by Candrel and Husky Tear, and somehow, this year, I'm running a couple panels alongside them. This is where I need your advice. I've done public speaking and discussion before in the form of presentations and debates to staff, peers, and members of the public during my time at university, and I'm not shy by any means. However, I've never been in a situation where people are going to be asking me questions on a non-scientific subject where my opinion, as well as my technical knowledge, will be relied on for advice. This is an area you guys have quite a bit of experience, both in terms of running panels and conventions in general, and of course the podcast. So I was wondering if you can offer some insight on a couple of things that are worrying me. Obviously, I will be asking Candrel and Husky Tear too, but I respect you guys' opinions as well. First, how do you avoid coming across as confident without being arrogant? I want to be able to answer questions with confidence, but not sound like I'm preaching the word of God when really just stating a hopefully informed opinion. Okay, well.
Just basically preface your statements with, like, everything here is my personal opinion. Anything you hear is from my own experience, and
this is what's worked for me.
This is what works for me. Yeah, it's like, take anything I say with a grain of salt. These are my experiences. Feel free to apply them or not.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the thing with us. Like, we give you our opinions, but if we don't know, we'll be like, I don't fucking know. But we'll give you our opinions on things too.
And yeah, I mean, that's basically it. It's like
nothing we say on this show is word of God. It's just our own opinions. We've just been at it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And our opinions are not such, as we said before, have drifted over time.
Yeah.
And our sense of humor and everything else, so.
We've gotten old, Shiva.
Shut up. My boss's ex-manager's little kid, when I first moved to Texas, is graduating high school this year. It's really kind of disturbing. I knew you when you're in diapers, and now you're graduating. Oh, God, I'm old.
Panther's youngest sibling was 6.
Whose youngest sibling?
Panther's. Oh. Youngest sibling was 6 when we first met, and now he's graduating high school. So, yes, we've gotten old. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're fine. Yeah, so it's basically state, this is what's worked for me. Use it, don't use it, try it, discard it if you don't like it. You know, I'm just giving this knowledge to you. Do with it as you will. Let's see. Secondly, how much preparation should I do? Knowing the exact subjects of the panel and questions means I can essentially revise. Should I? And if so, what level? I don't see myself walking into the panel with flashcards, but it's worth brushing up on some literary technique and vernacular to answer some more technical questions. In short, yes. Coming with the ammo prepared and not needing it is better than
needing it, not having it.
Yeah. You know, brush up. You're there to dispense
knowledge.
Especially
if someone throws terms at you that you're not necessarily familiar with.
Yeah. Finally, any general advice on talking to other furries in a panel settings, things to look out for, how to diffuse an awkward question, or have a discussion without drifting into debate argument. Personal anecdotes, a good thing, or drifting into arrogance again. As ever, your advice is greatly appreciated. Ever enthusiastic, Jeeves the Roo, but still considering Bunny. No. Scotland. P.S. I can confirm there's no corgi newscaster in Zootopia here, Saverin. We had a snow leopard and a moose. The snow leopard did have a British accent, though, which I don't know if that was true in the U.S. version. I don't remember.
She did.
P.P.S. Have you heard any of the Bernie Lovers Zootopia comics on F.A.? Oh, they put on multiple pages a day, and while just black and white sketchy, they're still very witty, silly, and sometimes pretty hot when they get not safe for work. And that is Bernie, like Bernie Sanders, Lover, all one word.
I will have to look those up in a
second. I don't know if it's related to Bernie Sanders, but that's how they spelled it.
You know, he's a big fan of Bernie Sanders politics, and he loves drawing porn.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that account probably existed, but prior to Bernie's run. But anyways.
Personal anecdotes I find work just because it gives context. Mm-hmm. And telling a story is usually appreciated in a writing, you know, panel. Let's see.
And like we said, you know, if you preface the panel, hey, these are all personal opinions and experiences, anecdotes will help push the point across without being, like, mm-hmm. arrogant.
As far as defusing, awkward. It really depends on what the awkwardness is. If it's somebody right at, you know, getting too far detailed into the squishy parts of like writing porn, and that's not what the panel's about, you can kind of deflect. Sometimes people will start basically taking over the panel. At which point, you know, when they start talking about, well, this is how I do this, blah blah blah.
It's like, hi, can you? So you're like, with that, it'd be like, we'll be doing, you know, if you're doing a QA session, we'll be doing a QA session at the end. Why don't you save that till then?
Yeah.
You know, just be direct and be like, shut up. Without saying that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to keep the peace in your panel.
Or if you want to talk to them about it afterwards, it's like, come to me after the panel, we'll discuss it, you know, but we've got a couple more points we need to hit. And
yeah, because if you're doing a, like, panelist-directed panel where it's you three talking about your writing, you'll probably save the QA for the end and probably won't be accepting peanut gallery questions during the main meat of the panel. Just thinking, maybe. So, I don't know. Basically, if somebody does try to take over, you just be like, hey, let's save that for the QA at the end. Thanks.
Or come talk to me or, you know, see me after.
As for Bernie Lovers Utopia Comics, I haven't seen him, but I have seen Eric Schwartz did a series.
Hmm.
Of really cute ones. And it's the usual, it's like, it's my turn to say I'm going to be loud and I'm not apologizing either. And they're like, what? So it's cute and implies they bang. Also Rick Griffin's Zootopia.
Oh, I love Griffin's stuff.
His 6-page, I think it was, which it was like Nick has a nightmare that he was trapped in the original version of the Zootopia film.
Mm-hmm.
It's super cute. I really like Rick Griffin's stuff. It's really cute, well-defined. He doesn't do any sort of porn, so he's a good, clean artist you can show to normies. It was really cute, but I guess we'll have to look up Bernie Lover's Utopia Comics.
I just pulled up, and just a quick glance, they do look pretty damn cute.
Yep, show me.
I was actually sending a link to Sarah.
Oh.
Hold on. It's that good, just at a quick glance.
It's like, oh, hey, gotta send these.
There. Oh.
You can tell them to boot them my way.
I'll just send it to you.
Oh, yeah. You have me on Telegram. Derp.
Derp? That's how I said, what do you want for dinner?
see. Mentor. Let's see. I think I've seen these. Yes, I have seen these ones. Okay.
So, yeah, they look like really nice, clean line work. I didn't get to look at any of the panels yet, but just looking at the skimming the line work, it looks really clean.
I've actually seen these posted to the Co's Utopia threads. So yes, I have seen a few of them. They are cute. The line art's real simple but competent, and they're funny and cute. So that's good. So I have technically seen those.
Yeah, some of the line work is better than others, but some of it's actually really good.
Okay. So, Anonymous asked us a question. A vocal minority of people seem to have such a big problem with artists or even conventions making money. I keep seeing arguments popping up about how certain artists are, quote, too expensive and should, quote, lower their prices for those less financially able. And this is bleeding into the topic of ghosting and how to expect someone to pay for attendance at a con is supposedly classist and bigoted. I think those things are luxuries and people should stop being so fucking entitled. Your thoughts? Well,
yeah.
People need to stop being so fucking entitled.
I'm sorry, expecting someone to spend however many hours drawing for you for pennies, you know, it's not like these people sit down, sketch it out, and it's wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, done. It takes time. It's basically asking them to work for free.
Yeah.
Which, if it's a friend and it's a gift, it's great. That's called a gift. These people aren't your friends. And even if they are your friends, you shouldn't expect freebies from them.
They're people conducting business, and you pay for shit.
As far as conventions making money?
Oh, my God.
Well, one, you have to make money as a convention if you want to either A...
Keep having a convention.
Yeah. Pay for this year or pay for next year. I don't think people quite realize exactly how much it is to run a convention. TFS budget is over $100,000 a year. That's, I think we're up to like a...
We're
What was it? Like 100 and...
I think we're targeting 160.
Yeah.
For next year.
We're a small house each year to throw TFF. So think about it. Every year, we have to lay out that kind of money to keep doing this again. Because not only you have to pay for this year's stuff, you have to rent the stuff for next year. There are very few to no for-profit furry cons that I know of.
No.
I mean, even something the size of Akon, there's not many people who get paid for Akon, and they have 25,000 people.
30,000.
But yeah.
Yeah, there's not many people that get paid in that org, because a lot of it's one weekend to work a year, but Dean and Mary, that's their entire life, basically.
You know, when you're spending all day networking, building stuff, going to trade shows, sourcing.
Going to Japan to negotiate directly with companies? Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of conventions. I don't think nobody makes money. Making money means you pay all the bills and you have shit left over.
Yeah. And just putting it out there, Fiesta is doing very well. We've had good growth, and we stay within our means, and we have more money for next year than we had this year, and that's good. But that doesn't mean that we just blow it all on
hookers and blow.
Yeah, because
I mean,
that would buy a lot of hookers and blow, but then we wouldn't have a convention next year, and that'd make a lot of people very upset.
You know, the most that we usually do...
Plus, I don't have access to the account, so I couldn't do that.
Yeah, the only thing that really Fiesta does that doesn't go exactly turning... that money right back into more Fiesta is they'll occasionally buy pizza for the staff when we have to work through dinner hour stuffing con bags.
Yeah.
You know,
that's cost of doing business.
Yeah. So if we're working like all night, cause nobody can really either stop or you're afraid if people leave the hotel, you won't be able to pick up where you left off. So you feed them to keep them there.
Well, like, oh, shit, I did that out of pocket for my staff at Nightmare Nights last year.
Mm-hmm.
Or like I went to Fort Worth, bought a shitload of snacky things that would keep people going out of my own pocket because, you know, you got to take care of your dudes and
yeah.
dudettes.
So, yeah, I think there's a big misnomer that maybe con chairs or cons are rolling in dough and they make all this money off of people and they see us, oh, they're charging however many and there's this many people there. A lot of that just gets reinvested in doing it again.
Well, in the case of Fiesta, like 100% of it goes... Mm-hmm. The way that Fiesta is run and is set up, the funding for this year, the money we took in, goes... That kind of sets our budget for the following year.
That's what we have to spend on 2017. What we make in 2016, we cut it real close to... as close as we can to the wire... And then everything we make in 2016, that pays for the hotel and everything for 2017.
Yeah.
It pays it forward. So.
And Nightmare Nights is structured in a way that we pay yearly. We don't, because we're small enough, we don't have that big chunk of cash to go forward with. That every year we have to get the full funding for that year. Prior to the con.
And that's not unusual.
It's scary as shit, too.
A lot of cons run on that. What they take in for a year pays for that year's bills. And if they run short, they could be...
That's out of their chair's pockets.
Yeah. Fiesta is one of the few that got out the gate running in that we had initial people who invested. We did some, you know, funding. We were very conservative in the first year. And from that year, we were able to not only pay for that year, but pay for the next year.
And
we've been rolling it forward ever since. A lot of people don't get to do this. We had enough investors and people chipping in and scraping up everything the first year that we kind of pulled it out of thin air, people's pockets, everything else. Yeah. And then we were able to invest all of year one's money into year two, and we've been rolling forward. It's taken several other cons years before they can get to that point.
Nightmare Nights is probably never going to get to that point because the Phantom doesn't have that much of a lifespan yet left. But, I mean, fuck. You know, the whole thing about artists being too expensive, motherfucker, if you're not paying more than $200, you know, if you're not paying professional-level illustration prices, you should be fucking grateful. Yeah. If somebody's like, hey, you can do this full color two character background for $100 and it takes them 8 hours to do, you know, they're getting paid $12.50 an hour.
That's not bad for skill and practice.
Well, that's an office job, if that. You know, and if you're looking for, you know, if you divide the work by the hours done and what you're paying them, if you're paying them below minimum wage, fuck you. And they
basically,
I mean, if you're advocating for artists to work below minimum wage, especially skilled people that have honed their art for years, you are not entitled to shit. Same with cons. If you can go, if you don't think conventions are worth paying for, don't fucking show up. Because these are organizations that put on events for the fandoms that we serve because we give a damn about these fandoms. And it's a lot of work and effort. And if you're showing up and being a leech, and it's bad behavior, and if it's classist or bigoted to expect people to pay to come to a convention, well, then I guess we'll just be bigoted and classist, because fuck you, Tumblrite. Go back to your safe space.
The thing is knowing what most of the convention staffs I've run into, most of what I see working most conventions that I've been, there might be a couple people with really good paying jobs. I count myself as, you know, decently employed. A lot of people are, you know, minimum wage monkeys who might make a dollar or two above minimum wage, or they might be in like the $10, $11, $12 range. They're all people who are living in apartments. They may have a used car. You know, there may be a couple people who have like high-end jobs and drive like a really nice car, but the vast majority are just apartment dwellers with
roommates often,
because they spend a lot of money on fan shit and conventions.
Yeah. Life we chose.
But it's not, I don't know about classes, but if they sat down and they talked and they really looked at who runs a convention, a lot of them are just people just like them. They're not making much more in the way of money. And when it comes to artists, if they are a full-time artist, if you're paying them below minimum wage, you're basically asking them to live in poverty.
Yeah.
You know.
Art's a luxury. Attending a convention's a luxury. Sometimes you don't get luxuries. You're not entitled to them.
Yeah.
That framing in as it being bigoted in class just pisses me the fuck off, because no, it's not. You are not entitled to a convention. A convention is not a necessity. We put these on, but they cost real money to put together. If you can't go to a convention without putting yourself on the street, don't go to the convention. You don't need it that bad. Bottom fucking line.
I agree.
So, final email is about kangaroo penises. It's your turn, Shiva.
Oh, it is.
I mean, I can read it if you'd like. Oh. It's actually pretty long, but it talks about kangaroo penises.
This is relative to Sarah's interest, and he's given Jeeves a hard time several times on what part of his anatomy the balls are on, whether they're above or below. So.
Get it right, Rue Boy.
Balls on top. this is a long one. You should probably handle it, or else, well.
All right. Kangaroo Penis Mechanics, an essay for Savrin, colon P. This is, again, from Jeeves the Roo, or Bunny. Oh, no! Dear Notcast, sorry for the second email, but I realize I never answered the important question Savrin posed to me in last week's episode. No joke. I have a degree in zoology, a part of which was comparative physiology and anatomy, so I'm actually marginally qualified to talk about this. Kangaroo penises are weird. As marsupial mammals, they evolve separately and independently from placental mammals, i.e. your garden variety wolves, phoenix, jacats, and all those Zootopia characters. Their reproductive structure follows a generally different pattern. Their penis actually comes out of a modified cloaca, their reproductive element more often associated with reptiles and birds. While soft, it is retracted within this cloaca, and it forms the commonly associated S shape. When erect, it's mostly straight and follows a general thicker at the base, thinner at the top structure, like the cones you've seen drawn by some furry artists. There may be slight kinks or curves, but anything too pronounced would hamper mating efforts. Kangaroo penises are not prehensile, but they're bifurcated. Really. That is to say they branch off. This doesn't mean two cocks or two full shafts, it's just there may be a secondary offshoot towards the base. Kangaroos also don't pee through the penis, but from their cloaca. This means the kangaroo penis is just for mating. So if you ever see kangaroo water sports pictures with a guy peeing from his cock, sorry, furries, that's scientifically inaccurate. Whoosh, the more you know.
The more you
kangaroo
know.
Kangaroo balls, no joke, are prehensile. At least the kangaroo has some control over how to retract and relax them. This is why kangaroos don't slap themselves in the face as they bounce, and why you tend to see pictures of their balls hanging down when they're lying down relaxed. They are located over the penis, which is actually where the balls are located in our common ancestry. Consider species with internal testes. They are located within the torso, which is above the penis. As mammals developed external testes to avoid overheating their sperm as we became warm-blooded, this stuff actually has a very brief temperature range at which it is mobile and any good at swimming. They would have originally come out atop the penis, but this obviously wouldn't have been good for mating with quadrupedal species as it would get squashed between the copulating individuals. Thus, over time, evolution selected for those creatures whose balls didn't get in the way, thus were able to perform more matings without risk of injury or pain. An ancestor of modern placental mammals must have developed the under-the-penis balls now we have take for granted, while the marsupial mammals never developed that benefit, and instead developed internal musculature which made them able to withdraw their testes out of harm's way. Isn't evolution awesome and so weird? Side note, female kangaroos have multiple vaginas and can hold a fertilized embryo in stasis within one uterus, not only while a joey is developing in the other, but right up until the joey has been born, crawled up to the pouch. They're about the size of a bean when born and crawl through mom's fur with tiny little arms to the pouch and reach maturity to where it leaves the pouch entirely. Then the second embryo will automatically start to grow. This is regulated by various hormones the female produces while lactating. When she stops feeding the joey, levels of hormones change, which tells her womb it can start growing the new baby. So it's not just the gyrus who are cool and weird. I could totally carry on for days talking about cool marsupial anatomical traits and other species' reproductive cycles and systems. All talks of furries and yiffy murray purry sex aside, it's a bloody fascinating topic. But I'll leave you with one final fact. Did you know the two species of platypus and two species of echidna are also mammals, even though they lay eggs? They're the smallest classification of mammals in the world, monotremes. They make kangaroo genitals seem vanilla by comparison. Smiley face. Here endeth the lesson and the wall. Saverin, that'll teach you to ask a joke question to a furry biologist. Ever enthusiastic, Jeeves the Roo. Or Bunny. Holy crap, I'll be a placental mammal if I change species. I need to read up on bunny anatomy. Scotland.
Balls on top.
So, today we learned a thing.
Yay.
I'm enlightened. How about you?
Yes, actually, I did learn some things. I'm a huge biology buff, but there were some things
animals
in here.
Animals are weird.
I did not know in here, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Kanga Wuts. So, this episode, we've heard a song about Fuda and learned about kangaroo wangs. This has been very educational.
I did not know that they did not pee out of their wangs. That's very weird.
Modified kalakas. Weird.
Yes.
So, that's all the emails for the week. And we are going to wrap it up because it's quite nearly 10. We're at a little bit over an hour this week. It's actually a slightly shorter episode. So it'll be about an hour 20-ish by the time we're done. So that's cool.
Yeah, good show. I will be on for probably the next couple shows, barring illness, and then I'll be taking a break again because, holy shit, moving.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Every time moving comes up, the shrew from Secret of Nim comes screaming into my ear, it's moving day! Moving!
Oh, lift your entire house up with your brick up out of the muck.
It's
so that your children
day.
Don't drown in mud.
Yes.
Instead, your cats.
Your cats.
So, we're going to wrap this up. As always, again, you can email us at notcast@foxduffers.com. You can find us on Tumblr at notcast.tumblr.com. Also, since it's the start of the month, we actually do need to do our Patreon thing real quick, so I'm going to pull that up. So, you can find us on Twitter.
I'm Chimera, Khymaera, because Shiva is taken everywhere. And
I can find me at Saverin Drake. You can find Fuzzwolf at Fuzzwolf.
Because he finally got the full Fuzzwolf name.
Yeah, it turns out the other, I think he mentioned it that the dude who had it was a fan and was like, oh yeah, I'll swap with you. Because he had previously been Fuzzwolf 2000, which is, prior to year 2000 was cool. You're like, I'm in the future. And now it's like, I'm 16 years in the past.
You're dated now.
Yep, you're dated. It's like, there's that one as like, Fish Place on Josie and Beltline. It's like, Mariscos 2000, and it's like fish 2000.
It's like, okay.
But all right, so we are currently at 30 patrons with $69. How appropriate. Let's see. Looking to try and see my list. Just because I can be like, you guys are cool. Try to pull up the list.
Oh, dear.
No pressure.
No pressure. Come on.
Shit's not working.
Shit's broken.
Shit's broken. We'll have to do this next week. Sorry, guys.
Fucking Patreon.
Well, it's this jank ass
browser.
I mean, again, it's an iPad 1, so it stopped getting iOS updates at like iOS 5 or so. Mm-hmm. So it's super out of date because it's old. Again, it's an iPad 1. I'm actually going to double check, see when this came in. If you like the show and like to support us, you'll go to patreon.com/notcast, buck an episode, buck a month. You can set your own limits. That's great. Every little bit helps. We use this to
podcast box materials.
Podcast box materials and buying dinners and stuff. We should do that more. Where is this? Trying to about.
Mm-hmm.
This is running, iOS 5.1.1. So in rare at like 9.3.2.
Go make kitty eyes at Panther. Can I have a new one, please? This one's broken.
You know, it answers email just fine. We need to root and fix that one because it's a little Android tablet that can do the most current version of Android, but that takes time and effort. So we will do the Patreon reminder thing next week. Thank you, everybody, who does contribute.
When we can get the browser unblocked. Browser
to list the people without crashing constantly. So that wraps up this week. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, good night.
And don't fuck the steak.
Fuck the bunny.